Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Ringside Wrap here on the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com radio network. I am Mike Sempervivi, along with Les Thatcher, and haven't done a show with Les in a long time, and we haven't done a show all together, actually, in a long time, too. And as Rich put up in the forum and on his Facebook and everything, if you're one of those people that likes to send prayers, send a couple his way right now. He's had a rough run over the last 2 weeks. As everyone knows, we weren't here last week because he had a passing in the family. Another situation again this week, unfortunately, for him. So keep him in your prayers. But with that out of the way, Les Thatcher, I haven't done a show with you in a long, long time.
You don't sound a day older than the last time I talked to you, Mike. You've been gone. Have you been traveled around the world, or what exactly you've been up to?
I wish I could actually say that was the case. Unfortunately, not. No, the real world and the real world of business is unfortunately. I shouldn't say unfortunately is dragged me down on my on all my key fabulous things that I love to do, including wrestling and mixed martial arts. But on the business end of things, at least we opened a new liquor store at the beach. So that's been filling my time, unfortunately, right now. So how have you been?
A liquor store at the beach, huh?
Yes.
That's convenient.
It's amazing. If you open a liquor store in a resort town in the dead of summer, it's amazing the type of people that will flock to it. So
I bet. I've been okay.
Out of your time.
You know, I'm hanging in there, just plugging along and nothing special, watching, I'd like to say wrestling, but I'm not sure what I'm watching, Mike. While you've been gone, it's been such a mixed bag. It really has. I've said to several people, there's an old song when I was a small boy. I don't know how old I was, maybe 9, 10 years old. I don't know. But it was called Ball in the Jack was the name of the song. But the hook line in that song was two steps forward and two steps. You take two steps forward, you take two steps back. And that's what we call Ball in the Jack. And I thought, it's what we call WWE. They take... Only as of Sunday and Monday, they took about four steps back after taking two steps forward. They have smoked their way through stipulations and storylines and this, that, and the other thing over the last 3 weeks enough to last them till WrestleMania, for God's sakes. And quite frankly, through Monday night, I'm thinking, okay, who cares? I just think they've diluted what was so strong a few weeks ago. Here we go again, and we can get into detail on that if you like. You've obviously had some time between drinking and selling to be able to watch some of this, I'm hoping.
Oh yeah, I'm amazed. You know, I still had a chance because we tape Wrestling Observer Live, everybody, for those wondering, is often taped at 3 o'clock in the morning, Saturday night / Sunday morning Eastern time. So I've been able to do that show with him, and I've been surprised. I was surprised in his reaction this past Monday. I was surprised with a lot of people's reaction. Of, oh, no, but we thought SummerSlam was pretty good, and we thought Raw was pretty good, and it's like, wow, this is where we've gotten to as far as expectations go again. And one thing I brought up to him on Observer Live is it seems as though, and there's a lot of different things that we can talk about when it comes to this. There's so many shaking your head moments when it comes to a lot of the stuff they've done in a lot of different ways. But one of the biggest ones to me is they seem content to do every summer. Last year it was Nexus. I forget what it was the year before that. They're content with going, basically acting like a movie. We have this summer blockbuster, and it's the only thing we do. You know, and then we have the Royal Rumble blockbuster, and then the WrestleMania blockbuster, and then the rest of the year is just confusion and skipping along and not paying attention and not taking advantage of things and just limping into these things that the only three things they seem to care about. And I want to change gears here, because one thing you've always brought up, and that a lot of people that have ever booked or have ever, you know, worked in an office and been on top of things, have always said, fans, you listen to the fans, but you don't let them dictate to you what you're going to do. When it comes to Alberto Del Rio, I am a fan of Alberto Del Rio. I'll also be the first one to tell you to say he has not connected with the fans. This would be a time where that old analogy is not correct, because they made a mistake there. They've made a mistake rushing through the storyline with CM Punk, where they just, again, there's things you could have done. Even Alberto Del Rio, even if he was promised the title, he didn't have to do it now. Take advantage of what you did with Punk, and there's all of these things, and it's confusing. And really, at the end, too, I'm thinking on Monday, it was like, I know I should care about this, but I didn't care, and they didn't make me care about SummerSlam, which was treated as an afterthought. I mean, that was a B show, you know, dressed up in SummerSlam clothing.
Well, yeah, you're talking about blockbuster, but I think it was more SummerSlam lackluster. With the exception, now, here's the thing. Punk and Cena had a heck of a match. Christian and Randy had a hell of a match. But now, the angle, I'm not even adverse to what they did in the main event, except I'll break it down for tell you why why it was all too rushed. First of all, coming out of that thing, if I were coming back Monday night, Nash would have been Del Rio's bodyguard. But first of all, what the angle itself would have played out 2 months or so down the road, because there would have been a Punk Cena rubber match. And you needed that time. Well, a couple things were too rushed. And that is, firstly, the new chief operating officer hasn't been entrenched, hasn't been established, and already he's in controversy. I mean, he barely buttoned his shirt and tied his tie, and now it's like, you know, I mean, it's kind of like Vince Russo has been there. It's the way Russo puts tag teams together. They put you and I together. This week and next week we're having a controversy, and we haven't even established that we belong together, never mind there's a reason for us to argue. So there's really no, first of all, he didn't need to be the referee. Second of all, he doesn't need to be in any type of controversy until he's established as the man, as the no-nonsense new leader of the pack. And Punk needed that belt long enough to established that he was a major player, because that was one of the points that they came out with the week before, you know, on the go-to Raw, was that, you know, if he doesn't win, he's a one-hit wonder. Well, he's now still a one-hit wonder. But the other thing is, I have said all, I know you've been an advocate of Del Rio, and not just you, but Mike Johnson, and seems like Jesus Christ and the 12 disciples, everybody I talk to, I say, no, I don't see what you guys are seeing, and no, I don't want to put my belt on him. And as I stood there and listened to a city which has a large Hispanic population, they booed when Hunter mentioned that he was a champion when he came out and started his promo. If you listen to the crowd, which I try to get people to do, and not so much to the nobody, it was really like, yeah, okay, whatever. But the other thing is, with this whole silly soap opera, that rehash of the, you know, the family whatever controversy, Hunter doesn't know what his wife's doing or Nash is doing or whoever's doing, and yet he's supposed to be the power. Del Rio is now delegated to fourth or fifth down the line, because he's not the center, you know, the centerpiece of this thing, even though he has the belt. So it's the only the thing that Del Rio did the best for me on Monday night was he roll. I'm so tired of seeing guys horribly set themselves up for the 619. And my point there, I at some point, if I were the booker or the producer putting the match together, I'd say, Ray, if you can't put the guy up there where it looks legit, then don't put him up there at all. And I've often said, too, even if you know Ray's thing, if you find yourself draped over that rope, unless you're totally unconscious, why would you not try to at least scramble off there and lay on your belly? Del Rio got the hell out of Dodge. I said, thank you. Now you've done one thing that I really appreciate. But, you know, and I thought Cena's promo at the end, he's growing a set. That was the best promo John Cena has ever done, period, end of story. Other than that, I saw the show was just, you know, I said to somebody earlier today, I've lived 51 years in this business, listened to people say wrestlers or actors. They never said they were good ones, and, of course, we keep proving that we aren't. you know, Monday night was just, and again, we, you know, it's too soon for Hunter's wife to be involved, his ex, his best friend, the godfather of his children. I mean, it's, come on. You know, you need to establish some. He needed to be established and entrenched in that position. Punk needed to be established and entrenched as a champion, as a major player. And they, you know, and now it's just confusion, confusion. And one other thing before we move on with this, I watched the highlights of WrestleMania on NBC Saturday night, and as I sat there and watched that. I have said on this show and other shows so often, the young guys can't carry the ball. And just by viewing the highlights of Triple H and Taker, I thought, name, you know, without using both, you wouldn't have to use both hands. How many kids in that company can go out there and give you that kind of match? I mean, it's too, you know, I'm a big Kofi fan, but if Kofi's about waving his arms and getting the fireworks to go off and jumping as high in the air as he can before he comes down, and that wasn't, these two guys went out there to, I mean, if I'd never watched wrestling before and I watched that thing on NBC Saturday night, I saw two guys wanting to kick somebody's ass. I saw a competition. I saw, you know, something serious, something meaningful. And I'm sorry, I don't, and I'm a Kofi fan, but I don't see that with Kofi and Ziggler. I don't see it with most of these kids. And that's what the, you know, that's what the damn company's lapping now. And they need to go down, call Tampa, and let Steamer and Tom teach psychology, teach wrestling, and they can get into the whole, you know, theatrical thing later. I mean, because they're putting the cart before the horse, Mike.
And that's the part that drives me nuts, too, because, like, with Dolph, I actually see it, but, and I blame, and I'm going to, because I don't know who exactly to blame, I'm not going to ever say I'm that smart, but let's say Triple H. So, you know what, you know more than anyone what it takes, because you're one of the last ones. I mean, Undertaker, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Steve, those guys that came from that different and had to learn everything, and they worked it and they did it for so long. He's got the power to make a call to go, all of you right now, this group here, you are going to Florida to do that. And they don't do that. It's like they've had Kofi up on the roster for however long now. And I remember him teaming up with Harry Smith and OVW. And it's like, why, make these guys, I know, like, things we were talking about with the Kofi-Dolph match where that was pure laziness on their part when they're in the ring and they're not holding on to headlocks and they're lazily going through the motions. They should have professional pride and self-pride and not, even though you are being told to go out there and go through the motions, you don't have to do it in a lazy way where it's just sloppy and it's insulting. With that said, the flip side is, damn, I wish they would let these guys, I mean, develop these guys in a better way, because what, again, and we're seeing it all now, what does happen? What is it going to look like? What, you know, the future is a scary, scary thing if you don't like, you know, guys jumping up with, you know, boom, 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 and one-liners and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Alex Riley being the best example again, too, which glowed on Monday night with Jack Swagger. And it killed me. They had to make a crack to, about, you know, Swagger about it, you know, coming out of the break. But, you know, him basically having to deadlift him up there for that doctor bomb, Alex Riley, he looks like he's got all the tools in the world. I didn't want to, Alex, I should have never seen Alex Riley for three more years, let alone one more year. You know, one more year somewhere would have been nice. And
you know what? And on that,
because Triple
on that
got,
blow and finish.
Somebody got that power.
On that blow and finish, they should have gone away from it and come back to it. That was unprofessional,
yes.
Too. I'm sorry. You know,
well,
you blew it.
But
get Swagger away from
know
it.
That,
huh?
Well, who's because whose fault is that? But you guys who would not, I'm not saying Swagger shouldn't know any better because he's been around for a little bit longer, but is why doesn't somebody scream the refs here? I mean, who would make that call to go, Jesus, get away from it and do something else, even though the guys themselves should be doing it? Shouldn't they have been?
Well,
somebody
you know,
should have gotten yelled at.
Yeah, but they should have made that call. See, that's the thing. If somebody in that match should have had enough experience to say, okay, we blew it. It's obvious we blew it, so we work away from it. I mean, okay, so the match runs another minute and a half over and then come back to it and go in. But see, that's it. Can either one of those guys call a match in the ring? I have no earthly idea. Have they ever been taught to call a match in the ring? I have no idea. But that's exactly why I tell these kids, I don't give a damn if they tell you to lay a match out step by step. It's in situations like this, somebody has to be able to improvise, you know, and get creative. And the minute you blow it, instead of saying, well, let's try it again. Well, come on, help me. I need to get you up here. It's just, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And Vicky and Ziggler at ringside on the mic was embarrassing. And it was just a bad segment from start to finish. I mean, it just was. If I couldn't get you up, Mike, then I'm going to take you down, cover you, and while I'm covering you, I'm going to tell you, okay, we're going to do this, you know, whatever, and we'll come back to this. Again, maybe it's going to take another minute. That television show is not going to, you know, and honestly, if the writers understand, I know the producers will, the sad thing is the writers probably don't know the damn difference, but the producers should appreciate the fact that they, you know, that when they didn't hit it on the first try, they went away from it and came back to it. But again, does either one of these guys smart enough to do that? I don't know. When I say smart enough, I don't mean that they don't have the IQ or the intelligence. They don't have the experience or never taught to do it. I can't really say. But that's the problem.
That's the part that, and again, it drives me nuts because I was watching a little bit of Florida because of, we interviewed Jon Moxley, you know, a couple months ago, and he's in Florida as Dean Ambrose, and he has been portrayed in a way going after Tyler Black, what's his name now, Seth Rollins now, former Ring of Honor champion, you know, great young guy, both of them, you know, great guys in their own way. And William Regal is there at ringside. And William Regal, the first time he saw Dean Ambrose, you know, takes a shine to him and doesn't really overly hype it up or anything like that. And week after week, he's doing his job for the viewers of Florida to go, look at that, he's using the Union Jack cutter. I use that move. And I like this kid's attitude and little things where it's going along and it's like, damn, I wish I was watching that on Monday night instead of, you know, watching JR get his hat stomped or something like that. It's really, it's very frustrating.
Do you wonder who's jealous of JR that they continually do stupid things that are unnecessary? I don't know if you noticed or not, but Cole even came out of character and said that's over the line or, you know, something to that effect that wasn't necessary. And it wasn't. It's like, to what earthly good is that?
And I'm going to go back to listen. I think Ziggler said something along the lines, too, of how classless this is. And I know he's pointed out things, I guess, on his Twitter and Facebook and things like that, where he's just, you know, he just basically hints at what we're all saying anyway, which is, why?
Yeah, it's you know, you're mentioning, you know, and I want to back up, just say, you know, with Kofi is entertaining. He is an entertainer. He is not ever going to have a match like Michaels and Taker or Hunter and Taker. He's not. I mean, that's I don't mean that as an insult. That's because, you know, but guys like that, you know, years ago were regulated to mid-card. And again, that's not an insult. You know, it's like because you're in the lower part of the batting order, you're still in the major leagues, you know, if you play for the Red Sox. It doesn't mean it does because you're hitting ninth or eighth or seventh. It doesn't mean you're they might say, well, God, he's horrible. No, he's in the major leagues, man. There's very few guys there. So it's not an insult to say that. It's just it's a technical professional evaluation. He is not a guy that's going to pick your company up and carry him on your back. That's not an insult to Kofi. It's just a statement of fact, professional fact. The way you dress him, the way you present him, is what you've made him. If you want him to be a kick-ass, well, you know, like with Swagger. Here's a guy who, you know, was a top amateur, but would you have ever guessed that when he was out there shaking his legs in the air and going through all that craziness? I mean, you know, they themselves say perception is reality. Well, then I'm perceiving this guy as a goof, then he's a goof. You know, you're the one. I mean, these people are, you know, they're making the bed and they've got to lay in it. They're creating their own hell, their own problems. Alex Riley, I look at him and I like his look. You talk about you. All you guys are so high on Ziggler, and I was listening to Terry Taylor's interview on After Wrestling on the Score, and Terry said something I said all along, and I just smiled. He said, "You know, I can tell you pretty much about a guy's talent watching him walk to the ring." I've said that before, and yes, absolutely. You, when I say this, Mike, I don't mean an insult to you. You can't. Why? Because
you haven't been there.
You haven't danced the dance, exactly. You know, it's like you and I can dislike what Kobe Bryant does, but Kobe Bryant is smarter than either one of us will ever be at that level in basketball. You know, and I, you know, again, I'll go back to probably an unpleasant. A lot of unpleasant for me to tutor, but Chris Benoit walking to the ring was somebody getting ready to kick somebody's ass. I mean, it's that simple.
Yes.
He didn't slap hands. It wasn't about, I'm not running for president or mayor or governor. I'm in competition. I'm focusing on it. And whoever's in that ring, I'm going in there and wear him out. I'm going to beat him. That was, you know, the perception you got. I would believe if someone had sat down with me Saturday night and watched the highlights of WrestleMania on NBC, that person, if they'd never watched wrestling before, just watching Triple H and Taker, would have been interested in pursuing it further. But then they would have seen some of the stuff we're talking about, and they would not have been interested in seeing it. You know, it's like the thing. I, as sad as it made me, I smiled when Del Rio bombed on his promo because I said, I've been saying this all along. Thank you, Alberto. You've proved me right. I hate being right. I really do. You know, I hate actually understanding the business that I've worked in for over half a century, you know. and I get tired of arguing, you know, it's... what's the old saying? If it's a battle of wit, most of the people I argue with come unarmed, for Christ's sake. You know, but I also understand, you know, that some of these guys, you know, some of the other shows, they get email, you know, the old man craps on everything. No, you know, I'm judging it as a professional wrestler, as a professional trainer, as a booker, as a promoter, as a television commentator. I'm looking at it from the inside out. It's not about, is it entertaining? If I built roller coasters, I wouldn't just see the whee, you know, in a roller coaster. I would see the mechanics of it and how it was structured, and was it structurally sound? And that's the difference. So we'll never, you know, when I say we, meaning the general public, and I will probably never agree for the most part, unless they are interested in the mechanics of what go on. It's just, you know, is it funny when Hornswoggle beats Chavo Guerrero? It is if you're just a fan. To me, it's pathetic. I don't see anything funny about it at all. You know, so it's, and that's what I'm saying about this. It's just, you know, could Del Rio have been champion? I'm not saying he never could have been champion. I'm saying he wasn't ready to be champion. He wasn't over, and they didn't put him over. You know, just because he drove a fancy car and wore a silk scarf around his neck and had his own ring announcer doesn't qualify. I mean, that doesn't mean he's over. You know, we established guys in territories years ago, not by their promo or their – they couldn't be established by their entrance music because they didn't have any. They came in and kicked some people's asses, and that's what established them, you know. It's just it's not brain surgery. It's not rocket science. It's pretty commonplace, and everybody keeps trying to change it, and I that has me not only scratching my head but scratching other places too, wondering what the hell's going on.
Well, that's the amazing part of, again, I like Del Rio. I like the character, but he's obviously not working. The fans, the people they want to buy, they're not buying it. Now, you got this thing with Punk that you backed into, lucked into. However you went into it, it happened. Now, you've been dead set. You got to give Alberto the belt. We're going to give Alberto the belt. Since Royal Rumble, I guess, they've had a plan. We're going to get Alberto the belt. But then weird things have happened with Edge and with this and with that and with everything else. And still at this point, again, and I'm saying this as a fan of the guys, everybody's not exactly buying it. In fact, they're not buying it, period. So they're buying your ring announcer more than they're buying you. But you have this thing with Punk. You have SummerSlam. You had 4 weeks between Money in the Bank and SummerSlam. You have Night of Champions, a pay-per-view, a show you want people to pay money for in a couple weeks after that. Then you have Hell in a Cell. And then you have Vengeance. And then you have all of these things that you want people to spend money on. You want them to separate themselves from $50. You have, why did you need to rush to put the title on Del Rio now when you had this thing with Punk that, as you said, there are so many facets of it that you could have drawn out to WrestleMania, let alone the next couple of months, where it's a scary thing because I gave whoever was involved credit to, they stopped the bickering between Waller and Cole. They had interviews after the matches in the ring when, you know, talking about the titles. The word pro wrestling was brought back. They hit on this thing with Punk. They were doing some things where it was like, okay, it's not everything, but you're making me feel better as a longtime professional wrestling fan. And it's almost like they went, oh, is this what we used to do? Okay, oh yeah, sorry, we were just going to take that away from you. We're going to do what we wanted to do, and somebody's going to spend $50. I just don't know who's going to spend $50 on all these next pay-per-views coming up, because everyone's just basically going to sit back and wait for the Rocket Survivor Series. I'm really surprised by that, and I don't. You know,
as much as I like Cena's promo at the end, when he said, "You're not a champion, you're a what?" I forget what he said, and I thought, "Why? You know, you're stating the obvious here." And it's true. But then that also again devaluates Del Rio with the belt, and like I said earlier. You know, you're wondering, is Stephanie cheating on Hunter and trying to get Punk out? Was it Stephanie that called Nash? Is Nash part of this conspiracy? You know, is Hunter in on this? And then, of course, there's Punk and Cena, who both got screwed out of this thing. Okay, so where does Alberto Del Rio? He's fifth or sixth down the priority pole on this thing. And so, again, like I said, San Diego, I mean, I don't know what the Hispanic population is there, but if he can't, I mean, never mind them cheering him, like, because he's one of our, you know, one of us, they're not even booing him. That's scarier yet, you know. So I heard somebody say on a recap, well, they should have put the belt on him in Mexico. I don't care if they put the belt on him in Algeria, for Christ's sake. It's not time. And in Mexico is the last place he should need the belt. He's already over in Mexico as a heel. So, I mean, that's, you know, there is no solid, legitimate explanation for this, except this is what we decided to do, and we're going to do it, you know, which they, if somebody there that's got any brains at all didn't realize that it was a bad move at that point, I can't even, you know, it's here we go again with the old, right? He's walking around naked, and we're all telling him what a great tailor he's got, for Christ's sake.
Aversion to money. I don't know what it is. Maybe they become allergic to wanting to make money and things like that. And I did get a kick out of something on Monday, though, and I don't know where you stand on this. Now, Kevin Nash got the what treatment, which he didn't expect, was completely, I'm not going to say decimated by CM Punk in a back-and-forth battle there, but I got to be honest, as someone who's really tired of that point of history being rehashed, and again, nothing, I don't know Kevin Nash. You know, I guess if the safest thing, I guess, for, you know, somebody in my family, if they want to be a part of us, I guess be like Kevin Nash, where you can just be really political and be really big and try to do as little as possible and make the most money. Hopefully you'll be able, you know, to have a safe body that way if you decide to
I
get
wish I were that smart,
guess,
Mike. You know, everybody knocks
well, that's...
I wish I were as smart as he. You know what? Here's the funny thing. I was telling somebody today. Kevin's, you know, he worked one of the Pillman shows for us. When I was with WCW, we had him and Jindrak and Palumbo and Sanders in for it wasn't a Juggalo, but it was that similar, you know, up in North Central Ohio. They had an outdoor concert, and we had matches there for 2 days. And those guys were in, and I've known, I met Kevin when he was playing basketball at University of Tennessee before he ever got in the wrestling business. He's glib, he's funny, he's entertaining, he's sharp, he's an intelligent man. Someone mentioned to me, and it, you know, and I thought, well, it's an observation to think about. Did they tell him to back off and let Punk burn him? Because Kevin. I don't know that – I'm not saying it can't be done, but I'll tell you, that whole thing between the two of them started to lose its luster toward the end anyway, both of them. I mean, it
– Oh, yeah, because it went on too long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I had thought the week before the signing of the contract between Cena and Punk started to dribble down too, because this was too stretched out, you know. And when we're talking about players in this, well, we forgot to add Johnny Ace or Johnny Laurinaitis, who's now, you know, is there a conspiracy to get Hunter out? Is John and Stephanie you know, or is this to bring Vince back into power and Stephanie's going to turn on her husband? I mean, you know, I know the message boards people probably love it. You know, all the amateur bookers, you know, everybody's got a storyline. But none of this, all this does, I mean, it's actually taken, again, I think, after the two matches Cena and Punk had, two of the best matches John Cena has ever had, by the way, maybe the only thing better was the one he had with Michaels, the television, you know, when they went to a draw. But they had a third match in them. I mean, it was just the scenario, just the way Punk won, there was a third match. You know, and they didn't have to go past that. So it's been overwritten, overbooked, call it over whatever you want. But, and again, they've burned through stipulations and storylines that's like, God, you know, they've done 6 months worth of stuff in 3 weeks. And it's actually too much. It's not, people are going to speculate, but not in a, it's not like, wow, I can't wait to see what's happened. Because several people I've talked to this week that, you know, like to study the business and, you know, are into it a little deeper than just for the, you know, booze and cheers, are saying, oh, Christ, here we go again, you know. And somebody said about the middle of that show Monday night, there was like 500,000 people bailed out. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, you know, I'll pull it up here. I got it here somewhere with what the numbers, you know, went by. Now,
right.
In doing that, they sprinkled, they've at least, with what happened on Sunday, with I think it was Stephanie leaving Cena's locker room and then the Triple H thing, and then it wasn't touched on because Cena came out and they talked to Alberto Del Rio. Now, it could be one of a million things that they've had in the past, like the Raw GM, where they just are not going to have an end to it and they'll just ignore it and it goes away. But there is still the possibility of Cena and Punk coming back after this, playing a role in things somehow, some way, leading possibly into Survivor Series or something like that. My concern, and I've said this about a million times, I do understand when people say why they would turn John Cena heel. I do understand what they're talking about in most cases when they present that argument. I still think it's complete sheer utter insanity for lots of different reasons. And it's not because I want Cena to be Superman or anything like that. I just, call me crazy, coming from an era where there was, I liked Ric Flair and Wahoo McDaniel for different reasons. I liked, Ricky Steamboat and, Sergeant Slaughter for different reasons. I can handle two guys, I can handle two good guys or two bad guys or whatever it is who happen to be different, that happen to play to different audiences. And my concern, only concern with some of the seeds they may have planted that way is they may actually turn Cena heel at some point. And I understand why you would do that with The Rock as far as getting the applause and everything, but I just still think that's insanity. Am I crazy for thinking everybody else would be crazy for turning John Cena?
Well, you know
why?
And that's the way things shift and change, like the weather sometimes, Mike. 5-6 weeks ago, well, or when the Punk Cena thing first, that dynamic first started, I saw, yes, you can switch Cena. Now, this whole Punk Cena thing has actually made Cena more of a man, has given him more gonads, the promo he did at the end of the show Monday night was the best promo he's had. I mean, it made him more of a serious player, more of a man, and never, no poo-poo jokes or gay jokes or stupidness that has been written for him. And so now I would think that turning him heel now would be like when they made a mistake and turned Austin heel, when they made a mistake and turned Eddie Guerrero into China's boyfriend and a drunk in a bar. This would be strike three of those for the first two. Yeah, I think it would be insane now. But, I can see him and Punk still having it because they have both equal amounts of support and detractors, which is fine. You know, I mean, that's like, let's say if you're you live in Phoenix, you may be a Diamondback, you may not like the Yankees or the Red Sox, but you can see the value of the history of the feud there and the dynamic and it's going to be a hell of a baseball game, you know? And so these guys have given you two matches plus, what they've done in terms of promos and stuff that give them validity and strength to go back and play. I think the biggest sore point to me here is Punk not having a chance to be, established as a major player, and I wouldn't even have brought him and Cena back in the next pay-per-view. I would have gone one past that before I brought them back and given him that 2 months to establish him as a champion. And again, he wouldn't have to dodge Cena. It's just that, they say what, you say whatever you want. I mean, there's a hundred ways of playing past that where they, you don't need to get that rubber match in right away. But, I just think, like, the whole thing with Nash on Sunday night created a huge, problem across the board. Again, I could see Kevin coming back as Del Rio's bodyguard. In fact, that's exactly where I figured it. And it still may, You may find out that it was. But how would Del Rio use Hunter's phone? Did Hunter hand Stephanie his phone? And she did. I mean, see, that's the other thing, too. They're trying too hard to give you, it's like the Clue board game, you know? And I don't want to play.
Well, it's that soap opera TV in a lot. Well, not bad when it comes to soap operas, but it's that soap opera mentality where you have dangling threads, and then because you're not sure, you have so many different people watching where they're going to pull on one. It seems to be that kind of mentality.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. You know, like, I don't watch, my wife watches soap operas, right? You know, General Hospital and all that. And I see enough of them to know that they've, like, the main characters, like, and I'll use General Hospital as an example, and I couldn't even tell you they're the guy, the gangster, Sonny, or longer than I have, for Christ's sake, right? But, I mean, that's the whole point. They are established. And these, and what they're trying to do with their soap opera is run through it at 100 miles an hour. And hardly, you know, and the whole thing isn't really that established. I mean, even though Cena and Punk have been at it for a few weeks, it's not like, you know, they've been feuding for years or a month or you know, or whatever. But, you know, it's just, there's no substance. I guess that's what I'm trying. There's no foundation. They're just throwing too many things out there. And Hunter has been the general manager for 15 minutes. You know, Del Rio won the title 30 seconds ago. Punk was champion for 3.7 seconds. I mean, who gives a damn? You know, especially
when you look at like you were saying, Triple H didn't have to do anything right away or anything like that. Can you imagine Hell in a Cell in October, which would be one pay-per-view in September, then Hell in a Cell? Where you wait for that rubber match, you build it up for that time. Punk and Cena are both being cheered by their respective groups. They go in Hell in a Cell and basically murder each other. And again, I heaven forbid there's blood, and I know they can't do that. You're so stupid. But obviously, it's hard to match Money in the Bank, but if they can wreck enough shop in Hell in a Cell, where at the end both people, are much like Money in the Bank, are actually standing up and applauding this, and they go through that war, then Del Rio, who hopefully you've been building up more over the last few weeks on Raw, trying to get him over more, and they say you do, he goes and cashes it in there. Again, wouldn't that make more sense? Cena and Punk would be a little safer as far as the cheers go. They both get screwed by the system. There is Del Rio. I don't know. I don't know why they rush through things so fast when there's no need to, and I don't know. What's the only way you can get... I don't know how would you, as someone who knows how... To me, the only thing I could think of with Punk right now is he goes and navigates through all these landmines that WWE and this, that, and the other are throwing in front of him. And he just... I don't know. Does he... I don't know. How do you rebuild him back up? Go through all Hunter's cronies and have...
Well, you know, that therein lies the problem, Mike, too. Because realize... He walked away because he was being discriminated against. He, you know, then Hunter convinced him because it's a whole new day to come back. And so then the whole new day lasted less than a day. And so he's right back in the same position again, you know. I mean, you know, but of course you can't talk about redundant. I'm leaving again. Well, you know, I mean, he can't do that, but it's just like, you know, somebody's got to be saying, Jesus, Punk got screwed over again, right? You know, it's just, I don't know that there's a good way. I mean, they're, what they have done over 2 days is buried themselves into a mess that isn't really quick. There's no quick fix for it. There is no quick fix. The fact that Cena and Punk still have another match in them doesn't matter now because neither one of them are the champion. And, you know, so, if you take the belt off Del Rio right now, well, and Del Rio, I'm afraid, is going to be in another Jack Swagger. You know, the way they're going, Mike,
yeah,
this time next year, everybody on that roster could have been world champion.
And you're right. I think he'll be a little bit safer than Jack Swagger because I think he's more, I don't know, Swagger, and again, I mean, he's just, I think he'll get more love from the company as far as how he's presented. I don't think he'll be as much as Swagger, but the results could very well end up being the same. Yeah. With at the end, yeah. Nobody's going to remember
what I meant.
Brain
you know,
or
that,
remember anything.
Yeah, it's, you know, that nobody, you know, that nobody cares. Yeah, and somebody said to me today on somebody's message board, they were, you know, people saying, oh, this is cool, you really don't know, and no, you really don't. But that's not such a good thing. You know, I mean, again, it's simplicity is so much more effective. And doing it slowly, you know, it's just, to rush through all this is just crazy, 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 crazy. And I don't see, again, it's almost like they're mirroring impact. You know, it's like, wow, those guys are, you know, people are talking about them guys on Impact. We're going to talk about us, too. I mean, when you stop and think that how many weeks ago was it that Jim Rome, who is the world's largest detractor of professional wrestling, wanted CM Punk on his show?
Yes.
And if Jim Rome saw Raw Monday night, he wouldn't want anybody on his show. He'd be right back burying professional wrestling, and you couldn't hardly blame him.
Punk,
you know, so
tell me
where do you go? I mean, if you stop and think of that, just that alone, just the Jim Rome thing alone, and how many weeks ago was that? 5 weeks ago, maybe? Four? A month? 5, 6 weeks at the maximum.
Yeah.
Right? And then everybody, and you know, and the other thing is, everybody thought on Sunday night that thank God they're going to take the women's title off the world's best screamer. I get so tired. Kelly holds the belt up nice. She smiles nice, and she screams like a friggin' idiot when she's instead of selling. You know, it's like I want to show something in her mouth, and no, it's not what you think either, Mike. but you know, everybody
heard that 14 flip.
Yeah, thank God they're going to put the belt on Beth Phoenix. No, they're not either. They're going to keep it on Kelly.
I thought it would be Beth. I'm actually okay with that because the only thing to me that they can do is at WrestleMania next year, what I would want them to do is, because it's the only thing out there, is to do Beth and Natalya, and the whole division is, well, shit. And it, again, they're probably all really nice girls, but the division is shit. Nobody knows what to do other than those two girls for the most part. I'm actually almost fine with it. I just want all of their matches to be 30 seconds long, except for Beth and Natalya, if they wrestle each other. So I guess if this is the only way you can push that out, I guess I'm okay with it because,
well,
unless
you know,
karma
comes out. And I think Eve Torres is a good athlete, and I think with Beth or Natalya, she could probably have a much better match because if you notice, she is now, in the entertainment business, if you're gay, they give you what, you know, a gay guy gets so that the general public doesn't know that, or this used to be the case. He always had a girl in his arm, and she was called his beard. In other words, his disguise. Well, if you'll notice now in tag matches, Eve is Kelly's disguise. She's Kelly's beard. She covers the fact that Kelly can't work.
And you know the damnedest thing about Eve is, too, Les, is that it's much like talking about Bryan Danielson and talking about smaller guys beating bigger guys with chokes and arm bars and incorporating MMA stuff. She's going out with a Gracie. Never, you know, again, it doesn't have to be full common knowledge or anything like that, but because she does need to work on so many other things as far as a match goes, as she continues to grow in wrestling, have her choke someone out. Incorporate that into it. Have a move like that because all you have to do is say, look, she's married to a Gracie. You know, she may not be the greatest in the ring, but she can be dangerous if she gets you. And they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so, well, you know, and you know, it's just so much. I mean, there was so much that could be right about the Punk Cena thing, and they rush Punk to come back, and well, people are expecting him to be at SummerSlam. Well, that's exactly the reason I wouldn't do it, because they're expecting it. That That's, you know, you said that earlier, and that would have been, you know, if somebody in the creative meeting had said, if I were the guy making the final decision, they said, well, people are expecting. And I said, well, good, then that's exactly what we're not going to do. You know, it's just, and of course, with the Beth and Kelly thing, they did exactly that, but that was a match where it didn't matter, where, you know, you should have been smart enough to do what everybody wanted you to do. I mean, somebody at some point has to realize that mechanical, physical talent in that ring between the opening bell and the final bell accounts for more than all your friggin' arm waving and costuming and music and, you know, it's just, they put too much stock in the fluff and not enough stock in the meat, you know. I mean, the side dishes are all they're worried about and not the main course. And again, turn on the NBC thing if you taped it from a Saturday night, and you'll see exactly that there's, you know, the closest thing I saw to that is Christian and Randy, you know. In that situation,
and again, I love Christian and Randy Orton and their matches. They had that one match I really liked. I think it was in Seattle earlier on this year. And, you know,
yeah.
But it seems to be almost like TNA, where they come up with reasons every month, or they were coming up with these bizarre reasons every month to basically get to Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle, which it didn't hurt my feelings because I liked watching Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett together in there. But what a screaming indictment of, again, and they've turned Sheamus baby face, but and Randy Orton doesn't want to work with Mark Henry and everything that's gone on there. Christian and Orton, would you, again, now you got Night of Champions in September, you have Hell in a Cell in October. There's ways to keep it going for a long time, you know, if you wanted to. And again, the matches, I will always bet that they're going to have a pretty damn good match, if not, you know, whatever, a really good match. Do you try to do something else, or do you just continue to roll with that? Because it's the only safe thing that you got.
A lot of it is too, Mike. Where, you know, it's like we're, you know, again, back in the clock up a great number of years when you were gone. Mooningham and I were talking. I said, you know, about depth. I said, Mike. I said, stop and think about the Mid-Atlantic roster in 1975. Now think about the Raw roster in 2011. There is no comparison. It's the 27 Yankees and the Pittsburgh Pirates, for Christ's sake. I mean, a lot of good young hopefuls, but no substance, you know, but no depth. You could go back in 75 to Charlotte, and you know, you could go deep into the roster and still draw money, you know, but you can't do that now. So there's a, you know, would I like to see Randy and Christian again? Not tomorrow. And yes, I think they're, you know, but you need to get away from it and come back to it. This, you know, it's just, I think Cena and Punk have at least a rubber match, then you could get them away. If Cena, if one of the baby faces, I mean, I think Mark Henry's hotter than, they've done the right thing with Mark. You know, he's hotter than he ever, they should have done this with him 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
Instead, they had him given birth to hands and marrying, you know,
Nay.
Women old enough to be his grandmother and stupid stuff that made no sense. You know, but here's the thing. You can't put him with Del Rio. I mean, you could, but he'd be the babyface. And then you wasted all your time of making him this vicious, huge guy that, you know, runs over people and drives people through walls. I think we've said this once or twice. They don't think past the end of their nose. You know, it's
one of the things that's been screamed about less, though, is that Orton, I guess Davis said this, Orton does not, and is steadfast, apparently, in not wanting to work with Mark Henry. The only other option, and he's tied up with Wade Barrett right now, is Daniel Bryan. And there is Sheamus, too, but that's where they're seemingly going with Sheamus and Henry a little bit more. But it's like, I mean, they should have already actually done Orton and Henry. And I just, I mean, what do you do in that situation? I mean, you, obviously the tail should never wag the dog, but you do it in Orton, again, was one of the guys that had not ran Anderson out, but he was one of those guys saying, "Boy, I'm not working with this guy because he's dangerous." With Mark Henry, I mean, I don't know. Does Orton hold that much sway? What would you do? I don't know.
I don't know why he does. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't, but I don't know why he does, honestly. You know, and you mentioned Daniel Bryan. Is this going to be the first guy with a briefcase that's going to lose every match up until WrestleMania?
Les, I mean, I swear when he won it, because I had one thought in my head when Punk, that he would win the title at WrestleMania. I mean, there was a way to do it, I thought, where he could actually win the title that night. But I swear he's going to be the first guy that cashes it in and loses.
Yeah.
That's the fact that they're back, the nerd thing is beating it up, and it's like you look at one Money in the Bank briefcase, then you look at the other one, it's like, come on. And I know I want Wade Barrett to get better, and what a way to do it, you know, working with Daniel Bryan, but it's like, come the hell on. Once you even give him the damn briefcase, if this is what you're going to continue to do, it's so, it's just, again, it's petty. I can't think of any other thing to say besides it's just petty.
I mean, if you know, it's just some of the thing is just makes, there's no rhyme or reason for why some of this stuff is done. I mean, here's the thing. He's already said he's going to hold on to that briefcase to WrestleMania. Then you need to be building him. Now, that doesn't mean he should beat everybody in your company. It doesn't mean that he should be the next Rey Mysterio and beat Kali, you know, or Henry, or but he, you know, you need to keep him strong. Beating him doesn't seem, it's like, well, then, you know, somebody's going to say, well, the stupid asshole, he better cash that damn briefcase in before he's put in the hospital to stay. He can't seem to win anyway. No wonder he's not cashing it in. You know, he knows he can't, it's not going to do him good to cash it in. He'll be the first guy with it that didn't win anything. Well, another thing. Do I think the tag team champions should be the tag team champions? I absolutely do not. But then they are your tag team champions, so who beats them? Who beat them Monday night?
A mixed together tag team.
Jobbers Anonymous, right?
Yeah.
Job
squad. Yeah, they were just thrown together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but the point, you know, and you know, Kofi wins occasionally, but when was the last time the other guys won a damn match?
Yeah, when was the last time they were even on the show?
Yeah, or is he one win and 14 losses in her? You know, I mean, again, what's the rhyme? You know, it's, I understand it's done for years. You know, your top contender pins the regional champion or the world champion in a tag match, which is, they'll tell you it doesn't count. Well, but hey, I beat Terry Funk in a tag match, so we'll, you know. Whether it was for the title or not, I still pinned him. So now I think that warrants me getting a world title shot. Okay, that kind of makes sense, okay? But here's two guys that have never been a team till 15 minutes ago. One of them hasn't won a match, you know, in a century or something. Of course, I'm exaggerating. One of them is just a whipping boy. So, hey, let's put them over the tag champions. Well, the tag champions aren't strong to begin with. And I would love to see them, like, you know, the talk is that Hunter wants to rebuild the tag. I've said all along, you know, tags can work on top. Tags can help solidify the middle of the card, just like if you took the cruiserweights and made them legitimately, you know, a strong division, then there's a million things you can do with them that is going to help your card. It's going to make it worth $50 to buy a pay-per-view. But I don't know where these ideas come from. I honestly don't, Mike. And I hate sitting here, you know, shooting them down. But I just think, like I say, they're creating their own hell, and they're muddling the waters to the point where it's not entertaining or suspenseful or exciting. It's just like, come on, you know, I don't care. That's, you know, it's a go away type of heat. Or if it's any heat at all, you know. Like on Monday night, if Hunter doesn't know why, you know, if Nash, now Hunter is in the building. Hunter is obviously established. He was the first guy out. He's been the first guy out for several nights now, but which we can stop doing. But he hears Nash say, well, Hunter said, why wouldn't Hunter come out and deny it? Kevin, I didn't send you anything. Well, where's Hunter? He's disappeared. He went into John Cena's dressing room in the first third of the show, and he hasn't been seen since. Well, does Cena time and gag him in there?
Yeah.
You know?
That's, yes. Again, just logic gaps.
Does Hunter watch his own show? You know, does Hunter tape the show and watch it? Does he know his wife confronted Punk? Does he know that Laurinaitis invited Kevin to his office? Hey, John, I'm the boss here. You invited Kevin into your office. Exactly what the hell was he doing there?
But that was the thing from Sunday, Les, when he says on Monday, well, I left him roll call tickets, didn't think about it afterwards. Wait, he came through the crowd. He jumped over, got in your ring, beat up one of your guys, and again, I know everyone's going to know it's Kevin Nash. Everyone's going to, you know, that line is fine. You know, it's not blurred anymore where it's like, oh, my God, is this real? But at least you could have tried, you know, and again.
You know, what was wrong with it? What, you know, in some cases, Mike, the truth is better than all the bullshit. And the truth is, why not say, you know, Kevin is under a Legends contract for the company. So he happened to be in the back. Did I expect him to do this? No. But he was, you know, he's under contract to the company, so he goes and comes as he pleases.
He could have brought up the Rumble. Yeah.
Yeah. Why would you say, well, hey, he lives in Florida, but he asked me for tickets for a show in California? Well, you know, Kevin just happened to want to jump on a plane and fly across the country. He had nothing better to do on Sunday. Oh, okay. You know, I mean.
You're in L.A. And he does movies, for God's sake. Hey, yeah, I'm walking off the movie set. Wanted to show up. Called for tickets. I didn't get a chance to see him. He sent me a text. Can you leave me some tickets? And I said, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, why does he, you know, that was my first thought is why he needs a ticket, because he works there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like I say, sometimes you try so hard to be, you know, to find some chicanery that you just end up making yourself look silly, you know. Well, everybody doesn't know he's a member of the company, but you know what? But it gives you a legitimate reason for him to be in the building. You know, because he works. You know, it's just, it's like I get so tired of seeing. Well, like, you know, Monday night, CM Punk's in the building. Well, of course he is. He's under contract, for Christ's sake. He works here. You know, it's like saying, Rich Tate's on Georgia Wrestling History. Yeah, well, it's his website, you damn fool. Of course he's on it.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I mean, it's just...
Yeah, if you ever worked anywhere and it's like, you know, the owner comes in and takes something and, you know, somebody that's new there doesn't know who he is. And, hey, well, you can't take that. And he just looks back. Look, I already paid for it once.
Yeah. Yeah. It's why don't we overstate the obvious here?
Now, Les, we've hit the top of the hour here a little bit. And I did want to take a little bit of a break before we come back. But
are we coming
I
back?
Are we
overstating the obvious?
No, because there's other good stuff I want to talk to you about just for a little bit here. We won't go the full 2 hours of the night, but we'll go for a little while after this. But I want you to – I know you've never been a Kofi fan. Well, not, I don't want to say a fan, but, you know, Kofi and Dolphin and Alberto, but some other people see you don't see. Now, there is one guy that you have always liked a lot that I have a little bit of an issue with, and we talked earlier on about the drop in viewership, and we'll do that after the break of because
okay.
It happened during this man's match. After I want you to tell me what I'm missing after the break with John Morrison, because there's a lot I like about John Morrison, but I just don't see it.
Okay.
But, see, I'm terrible doing the production of this new keyboard. Rich wasn't lying when he said this new production thing was hard, but ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in a few minutes.
This is Paul Stanley from Kiss for Rad, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Some of us work months producing a CD, but in less time than it takes to play it, someone will be killed in an alcohol-related crash. So please don't drive when you've been drinking. Plan ahead. Arrange a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard, ride a bike, or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
And be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
At letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
I present to you three of the fiercest subjects ever assembled in the Cage of Doom. First, the brain-wrenching behemoth Algebra 2, weighing in at a mind-boggling 800 pounds. Foreign languages! The multilingual international sensation capable of tossing you clear across the Atlantic. And finally, biology. More ferocious than formaldehyde, she'll dissect you one chromosome at a time. Who among you will step up to their challenge?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Me too.
I'm in.
Sign me up.
Take on the tough classes now. You need them to prepare for college. Find out which classes you need at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on the show. Mike Sempervivi and Les Thatcher here. And Les had kind of said it before the break, and I want to preface this by saying, first and foremost, I like John Morrison. He's a great look, great athlete, great everything. But there's something, at least with Dolph Ziggler, I know he was an All-American wrestler at Kent State, and I know if it came down to it, he can kick some ass, and I know it was too greatly influenced by Mid-South, but those types of guys who were quote-unquote real sports guys, they somehow do it for me. And with John Morrison not exactly being, they did the inset promo with him, there's something not there as far as him, to me, portraying anything more than like a upper mid-card kind of guy outside of his great athleticism. And because he's not been portrayed as a tough guy, he has no reputation that way, and he's not a good promo, I want to see it with John Morrison, and I'm not seeing it. What am I missing with John Morrison that you really think that he could be that guy?
I think he's got potential to be more than he is. I don't know that he is the guy. But, yes, he obviously got the look. I would probably get rid of his big fur coat. And when I say that, I would have him slowly go back to a more subtle look. He's a tremendous athlete. I mean, and he's got some moves that a guy his size normally don't use, but I would keep those sparingly. I would change him to a certain degree, but I'll tell you a guy who has disappeared off face, McIntyre.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you, that first night he came out there, I forget who it was he was at, but he said, my name is Drew McIntyre, and Truth that he'd come out and laid low the very first time he showed up on TV? I think it was,
That was one of his first things, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought right then, this guy, and sometimes, Mike, it's you can't say, this is what I see. It's just, Harley had it. What was it? Hell, I don't know. but he had it.
Felt right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, but McIntyre, I don't even know where the hell he's at. Is he parking cars or something? But, yeah, Morrison, I think with Morrison, had they have brought him out of the tag thing, if the transition had have been. But I think now, he finally beat Truth. I thought, thank God, because he comes back from an injury from this guy, and he jumps the guy the first night, and then Truth beats the hell out of him every other night. And I'm thinking, what's the story here? What is the story? Are they trying to change the pattern? Well, if they are, it's not working. And I could have told them that 6 years ago. I could have told them that 10 years. There is a pattern. There is a foundation to the business that no matter how you change the costuming and the music and the hairstyles and the color of their nail polish or whatever, the foundation still works. It's worked for a long, long time, and it will continue to work. I've never seen. We're at a time where we have urban wrestling, we have Chikara, we have Dragon Gate. Everybody wants to change. Guys, professional wrestling, Drew, it will draw if you know how to package it and promote it. Why do and the point is what I think some of these people fail to understand too is professional wrestling is a niche in itself. So when you change it into mime wrestling or gangster wrestling, then you are going to a niche of the niche. You're looking at a smaller demographic than there was to begin with. And it's just, there's more than one kind of car racing, but you got a real, there are three majors, NASCAR, Indy type car, and Grand National. Okay? Junk car, is so much, it's almost disappeared. So, they're trying to do, make it something, and it's not. And if it's done properly and done well, what it was, in the found music and this, I like CeeLo was on the pay-per-view. I think I was watching him on The Voice, and I'm not a huge fan, but, concert in the middle of your wrestling show is not, I think it's been proven that it's, no matter who the artist is, it's not a good idea. It takes.
Has it ever worked? Has it?
I don't think so. And then I hear, somebody was telling me here a couple weeks ago, somebody around this, I don't know, I say around this area, hey, so and so is doing rock and wrestling. I said, why? I said, the people that are a fan of this garage band or some local bar band may not even care about wrestling, and wrestling fans aren't buying a ticket to wrestling to see a band that they don't care about either. It worked back in 85, 84, the one time around, and so now everybody's trying. You know, it's like, give it a break. It's not, I mean, here again, and I wish I were wrong, but I don't think in this is, you know, we are trying so much. We aren't allowing the athletes to become actual professional wrestlers in the mode of Taker and Hunter and Michaels and Steamboat and Benoit and Malenko and Guerrero. And we realize we haven't, so we'll try to, you know, hang funny pictures on them and paint them up in bright colors and a lot of fire. Okay, but it's still, it doesn't matter. You know, an ugly, homely girl, no matter how you dress her, is still an ugly, homely girl. Right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
You know? I think there's some potential in a lot of these kids, but I don't know. I mean, they're not allowed to mature as you know, the part of the show that's so important, they're not allowed to mature as. That's the problem. They're more worried about, you know, how they dress and the whole icing, and not, they don't care about the cake. And again, I'm so curious, when Mooningham was on, we were talking about it, and I said, you know, here's the thing that nobody seems to be able to tell me. We talk, you know, never mind Impact. We don't even talk about it. Impact is Impact. It's going to be stupid no matter who's there, but unless they change the people behind the scenes. But they hire these new writers, and they keep, you know, there's a turnover in WWE. These, well, so-and-so, you know, he wrote soap operas, or so-and-so wrote, you know, movies and this. Okay, then we were just talking, like I mentioned, General Hospital. This thing has been ongoing for, God, I don't know how many years, right? But they also don't give you a year's worth of stories in a week. So if these...
Yeah.
Writers are cognizant of that, if they understand that, if they're talented in being able to make a soap opera or a drama on television palatable, why the hell aren't they able to do it? I mean, you know, and I couldn't go write General Hospital, but I understand that I can't go in there and shoot 16 people and have 14 kidnappings and pregnancies all in the same week, because what the hell's left to do? So
yeah.
Why are they doing it in our businesses would be my question, if they're so creative and so talented and you know, why aren't they allowed to be? Is part of this, and when I ask the question, I legitimately don't have an answer, is part of this because Bonnie Hammer is they're her bitch? Is that the deal? Is this all about USA? And I've said before,
it has to play into it.
Oh, well, sure,
a little bit, because they are the entertainment company aside. I mean, one of the things is, I think everybody is in agreement for the most part. An hour and a half wrestling show is sufficient, much less to have 3-hour ones and to do hot shot things, even more hot shot than they do on a regular basis, because USA's got that hand and gets involved, because it's to them, it's a TV show.
You think if you and I were part of the upper management group, that we could go in and, you think Bonnie is some kind of idiot? Because I mean, how could USA Network have risen to what it is if she were? So you think if we sat down with her over lunch or something, or in her office, and said, Bonnie, Burn Notice is a success, Royal Pains is a success, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is a success. I watch them myself. Do you give away an entire season of Burn Notice in the first 2 weeks? Do you leave the viewers wanting something so they come back the next week? Now, here's another thing, Bonnie. Burn Notice runs a 13-week schedule or whatever it happens to be, right? We run a 52-week schedule. So we need to be a little more selective than burn notice. Could she possibly fathom that, you think?
I would think, if explained properly, yes. Yes, yeah, I would think that would be the case.
Do you think
now,
that
what her
Subway
response
was
would be interesting?
It would, wouldn't it? I mean, really, I mean, she can't eat us. I mean, she can say, well, I don't care. I don't burn it out. Oh, okay. You know, it's, I mean, you know, I mean, but she can only agree or disagree. But I can't believe she can't see the validity of what we're talking about. And I also can't understand, if I were a Subway executive, if I were watching Monday night, that I would be excited about an entire building of 12,000 or however many people were there booing my Subway sandwich because the idiots behind the scenes have put a heel out there to promote it, for Christ's sake. Right?
The only thing that they could have possibly made that stupid Keith Stone one look better was that one. That was embarrassing. I did. I'm cringing, not because it's so bad. I'm cringing because there's a Subway exec sitting there going, you know, we're paying for this.
Yeah, yeah. They're 12,000 people. They're telling Mr. Subway, hey, how'd our promo go? Well, they booed us. What? Yeah, they booed the new chicken sandwich. Like, you know, what would have been the problem with having one of the baby faces come out and saying, hey, to what's the Subway guy's name? Jared?
Jared.
Yeah, Jared. Hey, Jared, I love those things. How about sharing it with me? And they break it in half and they both stand there and munch on it. What the hell's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And now
no
a guy who was your heavyweight champion, Miz, is now a shill for Subway.
Well, they've never been able to harness, and I was not the biggest Miz fan, and when he did the change to the suit, I'm like, okay, is this going to be Jericho light, you know, or you know, Bachwinkle
yeah.
light to it? But I think he's done a great job, but he's on TV a lot. He comes across great. People like him, and the whole lead-up to WrestleMania was bad enough, but they still have not been able to harness his stuff, and they do stuff like that thinking it's a good idea, and now Subway is trending. Come on.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Thank God. I hate that. I don't know what trending. I don't trend, so I couldn't say. But, you know, here's the other thing, too, Mike. I saw the Miz is a what we call a chicken shit heel, right?
Yeah.
He's the guy that should be. You know, Ric Flair made a lot of money by backpedaling, you know, and begging off. It still works today if it's done properly. But here's the other thing, too. What I said about Kofi applies to Miz. Everybody you push doesn't have to be a friggin' world champion. There were a lot of guys in the territories that drew money that never wore title belts because – you know, well, of course, it diminishes the value of the belt, obviously, if the entire territory, you know, the entire roster has had it 12 times each, for Christ's sake. But, I mean, everybody does, you know, you can do business with people. You can build storylines, angles, programs, call them whatever you like, in the mid-card with guys who are never going to be world champions, but they can, you know, legitimately two guys who have been tag team partners, let's say, you know, for a couple years can have a falling out and be a good, solid support in the middle of the card. They don't have to be world champions just because you want to push them a little bit. I've said for a long time, and I think Jim Cornette echoed this a number of years ago when TNA made Jarrett their world champion. I appreciate Jeff as a talent. I appreciate him as a worker. But he, to me, is that strong mid-card heel. He was never my world champion, you know. Lance Storm was listening to the show, you know, Doc and Will and I do on Observer, and I brought the point up where, you know, they said, well, you don't think Kofi's a good worker? I said, I didn't say that. I said he shouldn't be world champion. And Lance says, yes, thank you, Les, because just because a guy has talent, some talent doesn't mean that you automatically throw a belt on him. You know,
yeah.
There's subtleties that I know there are people in the company that understand those subtleties. I know Hunter is one because I know he legitimately is a student of the business, because I know that he has picked Harley's brain on occasion, you know, and has watched tapes and stuff. And, well, again, if you watched NBC, you realize he's more than just about shaking his ass and spitting water, you know. And when it was time to do the right thing, he went out there and did the job, you know, to Mark. So it's, you know, it's not like there's nobody there that knows. It's just like, let's throw 100,000 things against the wall, and we'll confuse. We may not get everybody involved in this, the fans, but we'll sure confuse the hell out of them, muddle the waters.
And then, and then when the one thing actually sticks a little bit, then they go, "Hey, look, we did something right. See, we told you. See, it stuck."
Yeah, I mean, it was so exciting when the punk thing took off, right? And they cut his microphone when he was on the stage at the end of that Raw, and then he walked out, you know, with the belt in Chicago, and God, it was, you know, there was buzz and people were talking, and Jim Rome wants him on his show, and he's doing ESPN and he's doing Gentleman's Quarterly, and my God, okay, well, this is all too good. Let's stop. Put a stop to this right now. it's almost like we're being too successful. We got to stop this. You know, it's crazy. You don't keep adding more layers to it. I think you ride that racehorse till he gets so sweaty and he can't run anymore. When I say that, you don't want to take it to that effect either, but when things are going good, then don't change them. You know, don't take off and start doing all this other crazy stuff. It's amazing. But, you know, it's almost like Vince Russo has infiltrated. You know, people have said, you think McMahon pays Vince Russo to do what he does in TNA. I'm wondering who Vince Russo is paying in WWE. You think Hunter is on Russo's payroll? Is that the deal?
And what's bizarre for me is that I watch New Japan Pro. I watch a lot of Japanese wrestling, obviously. For those who might be unaware, I've kind of been. It's funny. I don't know how I ended up becoming a Japanese wrestling guy, but I have, and I love watching Japanese wrestling. I love watching wrestling, even though it's a little bit of a different style. But New Japan Pro Wrestling, as all of this is going on in WWE right now, New Japan Pro Wrestling is running their annual summer league. They have different things in different parts of the year. They have a Best of the Super Juniors, which is legendary. Obviously, everyone knows Owen Hart and Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit and all of those guys that have wrestled in that. But in the summer, they have this thing called the G1 Climax. I know it's kind of an odd name, but the G1 Climax has been going on for years. I think it spawned from the original IWGP title tournament that they would have every year that Inoki and Hogan won famously, and it became their world title. But they've had this league, and basically what it is they have a bunch of guys between usually 14 to this year being the biggest, with 20 guys broken up into two divisions, and they all wrestle each other. And they all go at it. Basically, the world champion is in this, but usually what happens is the guy who wins it gets a title shot, you know, and it's something that has worked every single year. Now, New Japan, for a variety of reasons, was a company that was literally on death's door, you know, a couple of years ago. In the past few years, they are now, as it stands today, the best professional wrestling company in the world, by far, hands down, no question to me. Other people would, but I would just say no. If you watch this, you will know. And there's been a couple of people on the Figure Four board that have actually done that and gotten into it because they've been, you know, there's accessibility to it now with YouTube and other things, and they've grown tired of what WWE and TNA have given them, and Dragon Gate's not their thing, and Ring of Honor they can't see, so they're not into it, so they've migrated to New Japan. And it's amazing, as all of this is going on with WWE, New Japan's got a bunch of characters that are characters. There's big guys, there's fat guys, there's goofy guys, there's guys who run through the crowd, there's great, you know, technical workers. There's, you know, all of these different things, and they have built up themselves over the last couple of years. They rebuilt all the fans that ran away from them, that said they hated what was going on and were done with it. They took time. They booked correctly. They made the right characters and slotted them on the card accordingly. They've used their older talent to do things with younger guys, and to Eugene Nagata being one of them, and slotted them all perfectly, and they've rebuilt faith amongst their fan base, where times have changed in Japan, where there's not zillions of people watching like they used to do back in the day, but they've been able to bring back a lot of their older fans that basically were hated the directions they've gone, and they've rebuilt it up with faith over time. And watching this G1 League of, and again, there's a guy by the name of Hiroshi Tanahashi, who most people would only recognize, the odds are, from being in the Wrestling Observer, always placing high amongst the end-of-the-year award for, that John Cena usually wins as far as box office draw. And he's always up there. And to me, he's even far exceeds John Cena because of the fact that, well, he's a tremendous worker. But they've had this system of, while this is going on, they've built up their own talent. They haven't brought in guys from elsewhere. They closed the doors. The only kid that they have from really outside that they've been building up from over the years is a kid by the name of Prince Devitt from Ireland. And he's been the one outsider. But everything else, they decided to concentrate on building up their talent and their younger guys and making sure that bringing them along slowly, having them go through the old dojo system, which is not as dramatic anymore, but it's still a tough thing where, you know, they're young guys. They've been able to build it and do all of this stuff. And I'm watching New Japan have so much success this year with the G1. Hiroshi Tenzan, who is I'm not saying ancient. I mean, he's in his late 40s, probably has the body of a guy in his 70s at this point. They put him in the tournament. He's Mr. G1. He's won the thing a lot. He comes from the era of Chono and Fujinami and the great Muda from that era. But he's a guy that he's still got some fight in him, but he's broken down and older. And he had a match with a young guy by the name of Shinsuke Nakamura, who is one of their biggest stars right now, a tough guy. And it was the perfect match for an older guy. And the whole thing worked great. He hadn't worked in a long time, and he's into this tournament now. And it just – and Les, I want to send you that match because I think it's just the dynamic is blowing my mind right now of a company that was almost dead. And then on the flip side, you have a company doing – with all the advantages in the world, doing all of these weird things, it's like, damn, I'm just amazed in the way, it's just amazing how that dynamic is, and it's frustrating, too, as I'm watching. It's like Drew McIntyre, Ted DiBiase Jr., Cody Rhodes, Alex Riley, guys who, like, they shouldn't, if you're not doing anything with them or you haven't been goofy roles, I wish they would send them over to Japan. I wish that was still an option because they can get so much better. And no one will miss them while they're gone because you're not doing anything with them now anyway. And right. MVP, Lance Archer, Carl Anderson is the last 18 months of Carl Anderson in New Japan Pro Wrestling, along with Jai Bernard, the former Prince Albert. He is not even the same guy as he was, and he is really developed, and he's going to have one of the most underrated years because nobody here is going to know about how good he's gotten. And it's just, man, the dynamic between the two, it's shocking where there's still one company out there doing pro wrestling with the old pro wrestling system, and it still works, and it's so great to see. And at the same time, it's still tough to see, you know, when you go back and flip the channel to WWE, and it's like, ah, you know, you watch something so good, then you see that, and it's like, damn it, you know, pro wrestling is still king. You know, New Japan had a show a couple of years ago, Pro Wrestling Be Strongest was the loose translation, and you know what? It still can be.
Sure.
Sorry about that rant.
No, that's cool. No, it's like the elephant in the room. They don't care. There are people that are knowledgeable about the business and say the same things, Mike, and nobody seems to care. It's like, well, we're going to, you know, it's like this whole thing, well, we're taking it to another level. Yes, you are, but it's not a level anybody wants to go to. They're not going to go broke. The company's going to survive, you know, and as long as they're making money, as long as the stock is, you know, being sold and they're paying dividends, then hell, they're going to be right whether they're right or not. You know, it's to me, it's you know, you never stop trying to improve things, and yet they seem to, you know, it's just, again, I think part of all this goofiness is the fact that they realize that a lot of they've got a lot of kids, they don't have depth, guys can go out there and carry the ball, you know, or carry the younger guys and make them look better, you know. That's scary part too. And I don't know, you know, where we're going to go with it. Before we go, and before I forget this, you mentioned Rich's family and keeping him in our thoughts and our prayers earlier. I want to mention that Bobby Fields, I want to send out the most sincere condolences to Bobby's family. Bobby passed away this week at 77. And, you know, Bobby and Don and Lee were very dominant in the Gulf Coast and Mobile from the late 50s and through the 60s and into the early 70s. Lee, of course, owned the promotion at one point and is the man who built the Mobile International Speedway, where we have a reunion every year. Bobby was the last of the brothers to continue to wrestle, and his health hasn't been good the last couple of years, and he just passed away at 77. In fact, the funeral was today.
God, thoughts and prayers go out to them too. And man, well, you know, and I don't want to go without saying too, because I think we brought it up when it was announced. I guess it had Paul Orndorff made an appearance at a function where I guess Ole Anderson was, and there were a couple other, Dick Slater, I believe, was, and apparently Paul Orndorff had announced that at least, you know, he has beaten cancer, the cancer that had struck him, and I think we had talked about that. So I do want to, just good news there.
That's wonderful.
They said he, even though apparently he's had trouble swallowing, so obviously he's really thin and everything, but apparently he was in pretty damn good spirits. And Dave Meltzer, I think it was, who had the good line of, you know, just chalk it up to another, you know, fight that Paul Orndorff didn't lose.
Right.
He didn't lose.
Yeah,
didn't
that's
lose
true.
Many.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I knew he'd had cancer and I just heard that a week or so ago too, that after the Legends thing in Atlanta, that he had made that announcement. Yeah, that's wonderful that he's been able to beat that. So it's all good, my friend.
I got one thing to ask you before we go, because obviously I'm sure you checked your inbox from Dave Meltzer, and they came out, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame nominations or nomination process has begun. It's starting to pop up on message boards where, you know, you get the same old thing again. And, you know, as it gets closer, I'm sure we'll talk about it. But I have one question on one team. I'm not sure how much you can tell me about them, but obviously there's always a debate over the Assassins I think they belong in. The Andersons, I think they belong in. Rock and Roll, you know what, I think eventually they belong in. But there's one team on there that to me is kind of a very interesting it's very interesting. The Von Brauners, Sal Weingroff, it from everything that I've studied and read, it seems to be that I would lean on putting them in. But unfortunately, I mean, outside of Carl Stern, and there's a few people that can really talk about them and their influence and everything else. Can you tell me at all about the Von Brauners and as far as their impact? Because I guess the knock against them is they didn't travel around a whole lot, but it seems to be that they seem to be very influential and make money everywhere they were. Can you tell me anything about them?
Yeah, I worked with them here in the this territory. Of course, Saul in Nashville, he was there, you know, but yeah, Kurt and Carl, they drew money. They drew money in Florida. They drew money in Tennessee. Those two, I'm sure of. I think they drew money in the Atlanta territory.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. So,
that's
yes.
And
Meltzer and I have had the
sure.
conversation about not traveling. It's in fact, Missy Hyatt and I were just communicating over the same thing via email this week. You know, the Anderson thing, I've said all along, I said, I don't care if they never went anyplace else. Their longevity is drawing. power was you know, and here's the other thing, too. Why, if, you know, if you and I are making a lot of money sitting here talking every Wednesday night, why are we going to go somewhere else? Why do we need to go somewhere else? The whole Anderson dynamic, it wasn't just, you know, it started with Gene and Lars. The reason I know that to be a fact, now they were together first, and they actually, but when they started to be pushed and draw was in 66 in Atlanta because I worked with them there. Kirby and I worked with them there. And I'm because Leo sat down the first night I was in there. I've told the story here before, so I won't go through it again. But he said, you know, he said, I know you're just coming in, but we need to get these guys over. I'm going to ride them because they're going to be my top heel team. And that was Lars and Gene. And then Lars and Gene from there, after a good run there, went into Charlotte. And then Ole came in and they did the three of them. And then Lars left and had the T-shirt shops all over hell and half of the world. I mean, he was, you know, he had shops in the very place. He was living in Aspen for a while and got out of the business. And then Ole and Gene drew money. And then Ole went on back into Atlanta. So they didn't travel a lot, but then they didn't need to. You know, they were constantly in a mix somewhere doing business. And I think the Von Brunners belong in. I think rock and roll belongs in. And the Assassins, I know for a fact, drew money in Atlanta. They drew money in Charlotte. They drew money in Tampa. They drew money in Phoenix. They drew money in Oklahoma. I don't know of a place they didn't draw money.
No, and that's the part where I think that, because I remember a couple of years ago, I remember. And thankfully, I already known Rich at that time and everything, and this is more than a while ago now. God, it's probably been about a decade where I was like, well, the Assassins only drew in Georgia. It's like, whoa, wait, hold on now. You know, it's like, it seems to be, if one thing gets a notion like, well, Ole didn't travel, or Wilbur Snyder didn't travel, it's like, Carlos Colon didn't travel. Why did they have to? And that's where it's like, I think sometimes when it comes to this,
you know,
the misinformation is deadly.
That whole story of if you're saying, well, they didn't travel, and that's reason enough, had you have been in our shoes and could have gotten away with making a living without traveling, believe me, my friend, you wouldn't have traveled either. I mean...
I was going to say, did everyone want to travel Bill Watts' schedule all the time? I wouldn't think so.
You know, I had two opportunities to go to that territory and gracefully passed on both of them. Because I didn't want to burn the bridge in the event that would be necessary at some point. But I had and I'll tell you the truth, I might have continued to wrestle a little while longer if the traveling was part of the reason the television was because I could stay in the same town and do the television. You know, I mean, it wasn't a big, it was just the traveling got to me. That's the thing. You can, it's easy to sit and say, well, you guys didn't travel. No, idiot. And if you'd had to been in a car 6 or 7 nights a week, you wouldn't have either if you had gotten away with it. You know, it's plus if you had a family with children, you got to uproot them and change schools, and you know, it's just. I mean, it was people have to realize it back in the territories. Especially if you had a family. Okay, we've got to go to a new territory, which means the kids got to go to a new school. We have to find a house. We have to move furniture. We have to reestablish a location, you've got to realize back then it wasn't like you had a contract. You didn't. It was a handshake or just a word. Hey, you call and they say, sure, come on in. We can use you on top. They're going to tell you business is this way or that way, which doesn't mean it's not subject to change 5 weeks after you get there. You know, so, I mean, if you're making good money, it's like I blew a couple shots to go to Japan because I was doing well where I was at, and I didn't want to, you know, get off the gravy train, which, because you didn't know if you came back to it, it was going to be there. So, you had to live it to make that assessment and just to say, well, they only worked two territories. I don't give a damn if they only worked one. You got to look at the longevity of the Andersons, and they were able to do business with everybody. You know, Greenville was on its ass, Greenville, South Carolina, and, you know, Scott Casey and I were not a top. Scott was just, you know, green in the business and hadn't been in the territory that long. And Ole and Gene said, give me Thatcher and the kid. We'll go down there and do some business. And we did. Without, you know, I mean, we had some TV promos, but it wasn't like Casey and I got on TV and started beating every other heel team in the territory. But that's how, you know, how hot the Andersons were. So, you know, yeah, they belong. Well, somebody might say, well, Ole was a bastard or something, and so he doesn't belong. But this is not about his personality or whether he booked you or didn't book you when he was a booker. This is about what they did, you know, between the ropes and how they did business, and they deserve to be there. They do, you know, but it's so subjective. I mean, you know, you follow other sports, baseball. You know, it's like I had a discussion the other day about some of the Dodgers. Well, you know, Gil Hodges doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, and this and somebody, you know, wait a minute, I don't, you know, I'm a big Dodgers fan, so me, Gil Hodges belongs in the Hall of Fame. Like, along with Reese and Robinson and Campanella and Snyder and on and on and on. But, you know, so it's subjective. But, yeah, there's no doubt that the guys we just talked about and the Von Brunners, too. I think part of the problem, Mike, is that so many people weren't around then. So they know the name, but they really don't understand, you know, who these guys were or never saw them or whatever, you know. But the Von Brunners,
well,
now there was a guy.
The Andersons.
Yeah. Well, sure.
Because they've only heard the promo. Most people have only heard the promos because tapes only, for the most part, only go back so far. Was after Gene's stroke, and only as more Georgia is starting to make its way out there, I think people are getting more. But I don't think people realize how mighty of a promo Ole was, or how Gene seemed to, from everybody says, yeah, he didn't look like this, that, or the other, but he transcended because you believe that this was a gruff guy that's going to kick your ass.
And he was a hell of a worker too. He could take a kid out. You know, talk about Flair's talent, but a lot of guys were able to go out there with broomsticks and have matches. It's just, you know, that's because the way you learned the business back then, there were a lot more, you know, guys in that position. So yes. Well, you know, and Missy and I were discussing Arn. You know, here's a guy who he played second banana to Flair, but here's a guy who is just a complete performer, if not maybe mechanically better than Flair in some ways. But, I mean, Arn could cut – he had the look. He could cut a promo. He could work his ass off. Will he ever make it? Who knows? I don't know, but – see, and that's the other thing, too. I'm judging it on the guy's talent. Well, did he ever draw him? Well, he was only part of the horseman. It's, okay, well, you know, that was his position. It's, you know, that doesn't make his talent any less because he was, because he was part of a faction or something. It was, he played the part he was offered, you know. He couldn't say, well, I want to be in the Hall of Fame, so put me on top by myself, because feeding his family was far more important. But, yes, he's one of the best performers out there and complete in terms of his look, his interview ability, his promo ability, and his in-ring performance, you know. So, but will he ever make it? That's like Dickie Murdoch. I don't know.
Well, yeah, so I wonder who the bar, I mean, obviously they always talk about that Murdoch bar. It's like watching, and I hadn't had a chance to see up until the last few years a lot of Southeastern stuff and Continental and stuff like that. Where, you know, in 1984, I was watching WWF, Crockett, AWA, you know, Mid South. There was that, but I didn't get a chance to see Continental. To watch Arn Anderson in 1984, if you put him in the WWE today, and it's like you talked about with the roster of 75, where you can name, you know, I don't care who it was, you know, on that roster, you put him in WWE today, and maybe outside of one or two guys, the lowest guy on the rung is going to be, you know, the top guy today. Arn Anderson,
sure.
Again, because most people know him from basically 85 on when he came in. Jesus, was he good.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've had guys say, well, you know, you can't tag teams can't be main event anymore because this bullshit. It's what you make them. You got to realize that WWF tag teams were not, it was Bruno or it was Graham or it was, I mean, tag teams were Drew in the Garden back in the 50s and 60s. You got to realize one of the biggest riots that ever happened to that building was the Bruiser and I think it was Bruiser and Jerry Graham against Perez and Rocca. But then as they moved on, Vince Sr., it was about Bruno and the singles thing and tag teams became, you know, mid card or semi final. Okay. So Vince Jr. played it the same way, and then they ended up playing tag teams down to where they were insignificant totally. It's how you pack, you know, if you put high-quality champagne in a Coke bottle, it's you can't sell it for, you're not going to sell it for $100 a bottle. I don't care what it tastes like. If you put it in the fancy bottle and package it that way and it's perceived as a $100 bottle of champagne, you'll get $100 for it. So it's, you know, it's, again, it's, a lot of it's in the packaging. And you know, back then, you know, there were a lot of good hands that weren't, top guys, but were capable of being so. We worked, Bull Ramos worked six mans with Dennis Hall and Roger Kirby and I and Frank and Jack Dalton, Donnie Fargo and Frank Dalton. In Louisiana, and we did business. Bull came into Charlotte and was a preliminary guy. Bull went to New York and worked on top with Bruno. So it was just how somebody wanted to use him. It wasn't necessarily that he was or wasn't there were guys who just worked preliminaries everywhere. There were guys who worked only on top everywhere. But then there were other guys who, you know, I've worked on top of territories. I've worked mid-car on territories. When I was green as grass, I worked underneath in territories. It's just, you know, that's...
Well, Les?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I missed you.
Well, you know what? I've got to get up in the morning. I've got clients starting at 6 a.m., so...
And for those out there, by the way, a little more behind the scenes of Les... Make sure, if you're a member of the WrestlingObserver.com Figure Four Weekly Empire, if you listen to Doc Young's show with Brian Alvarez from yesterday, if this isn't enough for you, go over there and listen to that. And, again, I have missed you. And hopefully...
Doc was on with Brian yesterday?
He sure was. Yep, he's part of the series that they're doing. They're talking to the hosts, I guess, one every week. It was Alan... Kunan a couple of days ago from the Dr. Keith show, and Doc Young was on actually yesterday talking about the show.
Is that? I'll have to go listen to that in the archive. Good. That's right. Doc told me he was going to be on. Sure, I forgot about it. Yeah, and then I'm doing a thing on PW Insider tomorrow with Mike Johnson and Mike Ebsenhart, Wrestler's Eye Radio, and then we'll be back here next week. Hopefully the band will be back together.
Yeah, really, God willing. Oh, hopefully. And you know, if you haven't gotten enough of me, and you know, well, how can you? Going to be doing.
And you know, I want to say, you know, Mike, I want to say, because somebody said to me, some of these young guys say you just rag on everything. I said, you know, this is not about, you know, we can be cheerleaders, but I think to me. You can find anybody to do that. It's a matter of dissecting the product, and I don't know that I've ever seen anything in the wrestling business that there wasn't a way to improve on. I mean, I think honestly, if it's like you take a Terry Funk to sit down and watch Undertaker and Helmsley, he could get really down technical and find ways to improve that match, whether. You know, Johnny Jones, who buys a ticket and watches DVDs and has an autograph book, for whether he could or not, or whether he'd care. But, you know, I try to bring another dynamic, a different dynamic to the thing, or a different side of the thing, and you know, it's just I love the business, and I want everybody to respect the product, and the product's been diluted a bit, so it is what it is. And Michael, you'll send us some free sample booze from your liquor store at the beach.
I can do that. Well, hopefully no ATF agents are listening, because I would never ship from a state that's not allowed to ship. But
all right, my friend. Well, I'll look forward to getting with you next week.
Yes, sir. Again, you're going to get kicked when you hear Doc's show, too, because they do bring up one thing that it's always great, because I get asked this, too, because, you know, obviously there are a lot of people that like Japanese wrestling and listen to my – they like Chikara, they like these other things. God, and they bitch and moan sometimes about, you know, your opinion of it and what you think about it and how it doesn't relate to you. But then when they – there's something that they agree with that you say, it's like, God bless his, you know, it's amazing that how that dynamic works. When somebody agrees with you, it's amazing how smart you are. I think you'll get a kick out of it. But again, Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and I, too, coming up this Sunday. Today, new channel on Sirius, channel 94 now, I believe it is. Just go to the WrestlingObserver.com site for those details there. And Les, again, great doing the show with you. Rich, I know you're going to listen to the archive, buddy, and we're all with you. And I hope everybody else will be with us next week, and hopefully we're all here. So I'm going to try to navigate this this board here and try to find the outro, and hope everybody's got has a great week. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.